Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and I am in the studio with my co-host, Dan McKay, on the right.
Hey, way over there, Natalie. You guys can't see us in the studio, but you know, our lefty is a little bit tardy this morning, and so Natalie and I have our assigned seats in the studio, and Natalie always
sits, one is between us.
And no one is between us, but Natalie's way over on this other side of the table in this spacious recording studio, KCPW, generously functioning here in Salt Lake Library Square.
And bringing you the latest political and public affairs news in our state. And, you know, Dan, the economy, national economy and Utah economy, right now in their longest sustained expansion, the Federal Reserve Board meets this week and lowers interest rates. This is at a time when, let me just give you a number, Utah's unemployment rate sits at 2.8%. And our job growth rate at 3%.
Yeah.
It doesn't get a lot better than that.
Nope.
And the Fed just lowered rates.
Yeah.
You're a businessman. What's going on? I'm going to obviously have some commentary.
To you. Well, we all know that the economy is, you know, at some point, you know, if you look at a clock and you say, hey, we're close to sunset on a rising economy, right?
Then late in the cycle.
Everybody understands we're late in the cycle, that kind of thing. And I think the sun was setting and the rate cut will bring the sun back up. Like in the weirdest way, it'll almost be like Alaska where you've got 24 hours of light for just this one day, right?
So just to add a little bit more commentary there. It was slowing a little while ago, and we got a massive tax cut, and that extended the expansion.
Yeah.
Now you've got the global economy slowing. You've got incredible uncertainty. I think this is what's really hard on the economy. It's uncertainty in trade policy.
You've got inverted yield curve.
Yeah.
At home.
So just for our listeners, you have short-term rates are higher than long-term rates, which means that people are more concerned about the risk in the short term.
Yep.
That's an inverted yield curve.
And thank you. Sorry.
The Fed sees that and says, you know, our mission is, you know, full employment and low inflation, and we think it makes sense to lower rates.
Yeah. Well, I will say there is you can look at several things at the federal level that might be keeping growth off or creating uncertainty, right?
Like presidential mayhem?
Well, I mean, I would say you could say congressional mayhem. I mean, honestly, I'm not going to look at D.C. as functional.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say, but there's a regulatory regime right there that people do not understand where first base is. And so you have uncertainty in the market, and that explains part of the a major part of the inverted yield curve where the short-term rates are higher than the long-term rates, you know, because people are more uncertain about the short-term things going on in the economy. But a lot of that is regulatory. And so I think by the Fed doing this, it can create some certainty that the fundamentals in the market are strong.
Mm-hmm.
They are good despite the regulatory uncertainty in D.C.
Dan, it bothers me that we have so little headroom with our rates. So you could make a reasonable argument that part of the uncertainty, a big part of the uncertainty, is coming from trade policy.
Sure.
Not knowing what to expect there and the impact of tariffs. And here we have President Trump, who has basically been lobbying the Fed.
Yeah.
Drives me nuts. We're supposed to have this independent banking system, you know, that's not influenced
by
politics.
And Natalie, would he be the first president to have lobbied the Fed?
Usually, though, that they...
No, come on.
Well, I know,
smiling.
But usually what they talk about is, you know, changing the appointment.
Yeah.
Because the president has some power to appoint the Fed chair. But to put them in a situation where it looks like they're responding to the president when they lower rates, that drives me nuts. It feels like they've politicized the Fed. And I think the Fed would absolutely say, no, we're data-driven, and this is why we're doing it. But once again, the master in the White House got his way, Dan.
Yeah. Well, and okay. I'm going to say, in a lot of ways, following Trump's example has been a very strong thing for the economy, right?
Yeah.
And so take out the regulatory uncertainty, where would the market be, right?
Yeah.
If you had a functional Congress, where would the market be? And I would argue all of those things would have anti-recessionary measures and would be beneficial for the economy. And so we're very wonky, I just realized this morning.
I like to remind, though, ourselves and listeners that when you don't deal with things, they pile up. Yeah. They don't go away. They pile up.
Sure.
So, you know, we're sitting here.
That
happy.
Explains the papers on my desk.
Well, yeah. But we're happy that our economy is doing well and, you know, unemployment's low. Wages are rising. The expansion continues. But in the background, there's rising debt.
Yeah.
There's a Fed that's
just a spending package that was ridiculous out of Congress.
So no hope that we're going to get righteous on the debt anytime soon. You have a Fed that normally during a downturn has about 4 points of interest rate reductions to work with to help nurse the economy along, and it doesn't have that right now.
Nope.
And you have this dysfunction in Washington. Anyway, I'm just saying that it's piling up, and I do worry.
Yeah.
I do worry.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. When you talk to economists about this issue, this is for our listeners, it's always interesting because everyone, you know, every economist has their own take on things, right? Mm-hmm. And I have found in my experience that economists are always the most negative about stuff all the time.
There's this saying that economists have predicted, you know, 12 of the last three recessions.
Yes. Okay. Like fair. That. Fair. Yeah. That's a very good
saying. Because there's a saying in economics, when you're in a forecasting role, it's much, you know, you don't want to miss it.
Yeah.
And there's a saying that it's better to arrive at the airport 2 hours early than 5 minutes late.
Hmm.
And that's how economists feel about the business cycle.
Yeah, that's probably fair. So I'll just say, though, that, you know, that's a very good, I like the way you said that. And I think that's good for an economist to be able to pick on themselves. But, you know, I just think if you look at the country and where the country is going and the direction of the country, President Trump is going to be reelected because at the end of the day, it is the economy stupid.
That will carry it.
We have heard this over and over, and this will be, I think, and to your point, maybe it is politicized.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, in our next segment, we're going to talk about the Democratic debate day one, the first one. But as we do that, you know, you kind of set this up, Dan, because if the economy turns, whole new ballgame.
Whole new ballgame.
And so help me think of the timing of that. We've got a year and a half till the presidential election, not even a year and a half, a little less than that. If the economy starts to turn at the first of 2020, that changes the whole ballgame in your mind.
New ballgame because the election talking points will be different, right?
Yeah.
And when the economy changes, and, you know, that's always a nice way of saying, you know, jobs start slowing down. Construction is usually one of the first hit, and that's one of the major drivers of our economy in the country.
Yeah.
And as construction jobs tend to drop off, now we're in a situation where people are looking for work, and they're looking for services. They're looking for people to take care of them. They're looking for those things. And if you are looking for someone to take care of you, listen to the Democratic debate. They want to do it all for you.
Yeah.
They
do. Yeah, yeah.
And so that's why when you look at the political, the mercurial change that can happen if the recession is in the beginning of 2020. Now, that said, it will be interesting to see how that goes back and forth, because the Carter-Reagan election, you know, way back when, Carter had an economy that dropped off on him. Same thing.
And Bush 41 had the same thing, George H.W.
Yeah.
I remember after the Iraq war, it was like, who's going to fall on the sword and challenge him?
Yeah.
And then he ended up, the economy went south and he lost.
He did. Yeah. And so
a lot of precedents for how the economy affects presidential
have
elections.
A hard time getting a second term. And so, oh boy, the idea that we would have one of those Democrats from the Democrat debate be our president. I don't know what to do with that information.
Dan, so in our second segment, we'll talk about this debate. Tyrell Agard will join us. He's the vice chair of the county Democrats in Salt Lake County. But interestingly, you used a term in one of our last tapings. You used the term Middle America.
Yeah.
Middle America. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we need to talk about.
Yeah.
Is where is Middle America?
Where is Middle America?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Dan McKay on the right, and you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Tyrell Agard on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and you are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and we are so happy to have Tyrell join us in the studio. Tyrell, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking about interest rates and even how that gets politicized, so a little bit of politics with it, but let's talk about the Democratic debate, the second round of it, the CNN that was aired this week. We've got another one tonight and whatnot, but 10 candidates. They're all up there on stage. I watched about a third of it. I was struck by the tension between the moderates and the extremes among the 10. And maybe you can set that up a little bit better. But basically, Warren, Sanders end up being sort of the more extreme, at least from my perspective. And then you've got this Hickenlooper and Delaney, pulling up sort of the middle ground and everything in between. Your quick commentary.
Yeah, I do think that most of the focus last night, just simply due to the luck of the draw splitting the candidates between two nights, that you got Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren on the same night alongside Hickenlooper, Delaney, and the rest.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'd describe it as tension as much as I think there's legitimate disagreements on where to move forward. I think everybody on that stage agreed we need to improve our healthcare system.
Uh-huh.
And they all had different stances on how to get there, and that's where most of the disagreement and back and forth came from.
Were they really excited? I missed most of the debate, but I missed the healthcare segment. Were they really excited about returning to the private market? And like,
so I caught the whole debate, and they hated it.
Yeah,
they think your party's going to make things worse for us.
But Dan, Tyrell's kind of splitting hairs here about disagreement on policy and tension, because I kind of think they might be similar. But here's where I saw it. And I won't be conversant in all of the finer data points, but it's Medicare for all versus Medicare for those who want it or a public option.
Yeah,
that's the tension I felt. And this, I don't know this Delaney, former congressman.
No one does. He's pulling at 0-1%, and he got half the airtime last night.
Yeah.
Don't quite understand
and
that.
He's a former congressman. And also a CEO of a startup company. Am I getting that right?
That's my understanding, in the healthcare
field. But Dan, just to say this, he clearly knew business.
Yeah.
And Delaney is sitting there saying, and I think his business may have been in healthcare, because at one time he said, "None of you are clearly in the healthcare business. I am, and let me tell you how this works." And he basically said, "We will lose if we are telling, hundreds of millions of Americans to get off of private insurance that they like."
Yeah.
Here's where I
basically
strongly
brought up the unions that have negotiated these great benefits deals that we're going to now compel them to be in the government system.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Here's
Tara.
Where I very strongly disagree with Congressman Delaney, I guess former Congressman Delaney, and others who take that
He
view.
Had all the best expressions last
he,
night.
He was
his
a
face.
Very expressive fellow. but where I strongly disagree with it is so many tens to hundreds of millions of Americans already get their health care plans changed year to year, not because of their own choice. Either they change jobs or their employer changes providers or the provider changes plans. It already happens like every single year. Myself, for example, in the last year, I've changed health care plans because I changed employers.
Yeah.
And that changes to a new network, to new doctors. Previous doctors I was seeing weren't necessarily covered and vice versa. That's already happening.
Yeah.
That's not going to be caused by a change to Medicare for All. That's already happening. Medicare for All will stabilize that by ensuring that that doesn't happen anymore. Everybody will be on a standard plan.
So, Dan, let's get you in the conversation here just from this perspective. How do you read Middle America as it relates to these 10 candidates versus Trump on something like this, on healthcare?
Well,
I think most Americans would say it's almost the top issue.
Healthcare?
Yeah.
Yeah, and how to deal with the...
We're at a kind of tipping point.
Yeah. The more the government encroaches in healthcare, the worse it's getting. And that trend is just going further and further. And the key example is everything we did with Obamacare. I know everybody says it's got better. There are a few things, honestly, like pre-existing conditions that, you got to scratch your head about that probably should have been done before.
Yeah.
But you look at, you just look at the shift away from Americans being in charge of their own healthcare and shifting it to the government. I personally think that Middle America will react, strongly to that, and I don't think it will be positive.
I'm going to take us in a little different direction here and just kind of get your take. But this Mayor Buttigieg, really, for me, comes across as a voice of reason, even though, you know, I'm not of his political party and whatnot. But I think he is getting strong potential to be somebody's VP candidate. Is anyone else seeing that?
Absolutely. I have actually.
Did you really see that?
No, I've had the opportunity to hear from him in person as recently as last week. And that's the needle I think that he seems to be threading.
It's really interesting.
He's in it. And if he can win, that's great. But he's also recognizing that he's 37 years old. And if he doesn't win this one, he's not going away anytime soon.
He has. He very much has a Paul Ryan feel to him a little bit from the Democrat side. Like
very policy savvy.
Very policy savvy.
Young, good on camera.
Yeah. And very well thought.
Middle
out.
America.
Like he speaks well and he's able to express himself well.
Both of them Great Lakes states. Yeah. You know, Middle America.
High likability, I think, on Buttigieg. Yeah.
Dan, did the hair go up on the back of your neck when I said that, you know, Buttigieg was the voice of reason to me? Did I sound too liberal to you?
No.
I'm just saying among the group, I'm just sort of like, I can follow his reasoning in a way that Warren's and Sanders to me is just what I might call freebie economics. You know,
like if you're walking through Area 51, right, and there's all these like weird alien creatures everywhere, and you're like, you know, that one looks most like me. Okay.
Might be Buttigieg.
That's probably what you did with Buttigieg, right?
A little
right?
bit. Yep, a little
I'm
bit.
Down. The Democratic field is still Area 51, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Though.
And we should be clear. We are taping this on Wednesday. There's another debate to come out. So the
I
other
know.
10, we'll get more commentary on that. Dan, in the past week, it looks
clear.
Because
I think Kamala Harris is going to do well tonight.
I agree.
Yeah.
She's similar. She's very articulate, very well spoken.
Senator Harris.
Yeah. Can articulate things that may be a complex in the weeds wonkiness in a very relatable way.
Yeah.
And she's shown ability to do that. And I think she'll do it again tonight.
And she also, like, the things I really like so about her is she doesn't tend to, like, sit back and just, like, let things come to her. Like, she's very much out there and pushing. I like Kamala Harris. I think this race is going to – so if I were to predict – the January debate right now for the Democratic field, and I had to choose three. I bet there'll still be a straggler, a fourth in the race by then still. But if I were to pick three, I'm going to say it's Warren. It's going to be Sanders. Okay,
wow.
I'm surprised Sanders is holding on in my mind, but I still think Sanders holds on because it's almost a religious experience at a Bernie Sanders rally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's you got Warren
and
Sanders.
He's very good on the debate stage.
Yeah.
He just is.
And then I will throw, you've got Kamala Harris. And then I think, I know this is crazy probably, but I think, I can never say her name right. Is it
Klobuchar?
Klobuchar, yeah.
Klobuchar.
You think she hangs on?
I think she hangs on. But I think, okay, so, and this is my, okay, this is my worst cold day scenario, right? Is Klobuchar, if the economy goes south, she could become a very attractive presidential candidate.
Yeah, interesting.
That's no Biden.
What's that?
No Biden.
And no Biden.
Interesting.
I do not throw Biden in that
hot field. Take.
Yeah. You want to give your three?
Yeah. Can I give four?
Yes.
I'll give four. I would say Biden. He's not my first pick, but he's also clearly has a base of support. He's clearly the front runner right now. And even if he doesn't end up the nominee, he's not gone by January.
Uh-huh. He's smelling somebody's hair in a weird way and kicking himself out of the race before
then. I will still take that before Trump.
Okay, that's fair.
And then I would say, so Biden will be one. I would say Warren or Sanders. I don't know if
that's
Folk
how
will still be around
I
by
think
there.
Only one.
I think if
survives.
It's going to be
that's
one, it will probably be Warren. But I wouldn't be surprised to see either. And then I'd agree with Kamala Harris. And I don't think Pete Buttigieg is going anywhere. He's raised enough money he can stay in. Probably isn't going to be the nominee.
Yeah.
But
he's
raised enough money he can stay
I'm
in
I'm not all that different,
while.
Or I would throw out my thoughts.
I
do want to tell you one. Dan, I want to tell you one line from the debate that Sanders used that shows you how clever he is. This Delaney guy is going on about how your math doesn't work on this Medicare thing. And Sanders looks at him and says, that's because you're doing a for-profit system and mine's a not-for-profit. Math doesn't matter. It's a right.
Math doesn't matter.
He didn't really say math doesn't matter.
That.
But
no, I think that was actually pretty prescient for Sanders, and I think a lot of the Democratic—
Can you quote him better than I did?
I think you said pretty accurate.
I did okay, all right.
Was Mr. Delaney was saying along the lines
but
of, well, this doesn't work.
He was doing,
the
your numbers don't add up.
Here.
And he goes, of course they don't. Yeah. It's not a for-profit system.
Well, honestly, neither the Republicans or the Democrats are managing the government like the numbers matter anymore.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, let's stick with health care and federal. Last Friday, our state got word. It looks like the White House will not approve the waiver request that we have put forward from our state. Really disappointing news for legislative leadership. They were counting on this. it looks like what the voters approved in Prop 3 becomes really the law of the land. Am I getting this about right?
Yeah, that's the default.
Were
in
you
the...
surprised?
Well,
and help people understand what the waiver really did.
Well, instead of getting rid of, like, so can, instead of me going into waivers that we didn't get, mm-hmm. right?
Okay. Take a lot of time, yeah.
Which were promised we would get by your legislative leadership.
Maybe
he's going to go and be careful, Tyrone.
They told us it was a guaranteed thing, and it wasn't. You guys overturned the will of the people to implement something that we, as the voters, were told was guaranteed and would happen, and it didn't. And now you're left scrambling with egg on your face.
I never thought it was guaranteed.
We overturned the will of Salt Lake County, first of all.
The state of Utah.
Please don't get lost. We overturned the will of Salt Lake County. I'm not saying that's
good
or bad.
Who are Utahns?
I'm not going to say it's good or
it
bad.
It is the state of Utah who voted by majority, including your district.
We overturned the will of Salt Lake City.
And your district.
So, no, actually it failed in mine.
It failed in your old house district.
Yeah, even my old house district. It failed in both.
Well, it failed. There's about a dozen Republicans whose districts it passed in who voted against
it. This is where you guys are totally lost, and the public is too. I'm going to be very candid. Mm-hmm. Everyone is lost. It's like Delaney on healthcare, right? Uh-huh. Nobody's in the room on healthcare decisions, and they all want to make the decision for them, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody has not been in the room on these conversations. I know that the Trump administration and the health secretary and everybody was saying, these are the waivers. Here's the template. After the waivers and after we came up with our requests, the Trump administration filed new appeals based on, you know, the fact that the individual mandate had changed. Some of these other things have changed with the ACA. And as a result of the Affordable Care Act changes, they're saying there's constitutionality problems. And now they want to rely on this lawsuit to throw out the Affordable Care Act that Justice Roberts is not going to throw out. Mm-hmm. And so the problem is the Trump administration, despite letting us out there on a clothesline, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. and now cutting the line behind us, which is not my favorite, right?
Yeah, sure.
That being said, they believe there's constitutional issues with the ACA, and they want to work those out before they get anyone else in there.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't know how that's going
to work. Tyrell, you had some strident words to just kind of make your point, and that's appreciated. Being someone who's worked in Washington and watched how these debates work out, it is complicated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not trying to say it's not.
No, we were lying. It was simple.
No, I don't ever think there was lying, and I don't ever think there was a guarantee, but it looked highly likely.
That's right.
Hey, sure. Let's jump a couple other big news before our time's up. I want to talk about what's happened with the United Utah Party putting up a candidate to challenge Ben McAdams. This is Janya Broderick. I think I'm getting her name right. Mm-hmm. This is bad news for Congressman McAdams because she'll take votes. She'll take those middle. Mm-hmm. She'll take some of those middle ground votes. How are you feeling from the left?
Yeah, I definitely think that United Utah Party and this particular candidate will definitely focus on the middle, which is, I think, where Representative McAdams gets his biggest amount of strength.
Why are they doing this?
I won't speak for them. I don't know. I can say that, as we saw in polling from last week, Representative McAdams is the most popular Utah member of the delegation mm-hmm. of any party in either the House or the Senate. Mm-hmm. He was an incredibly popular Salt Lake County mayor who was reelected twice. So am I saying he's going to waltz to reelection? Absolutely not. I'm working my butt off every day to help. But yeah, this definitely throws a wrench in it.
Yeah.
I'm very curious how it will interact with who the eventual Republican is, because that will impact a lot as well.
Yeah, Dan, you know a lot about this district, someone who was courted to run in it. What's your strategic read of what's going on here? It's going to be dicey.
So I will say, you know, the United Utah, you can bank it now, put a pin in it now. Unfortunately, Mayor McAdams, Congressman McAdams, is serving his last term in Congress.
Wow. Okay.
And the only reason I say that, and honestly, knowing what I know about Congress and how tough it is to be there, maybe it'll be a huge favor. That being said, United Utah taking 2% or 3% from the middle is the death knell. There were, let's see, 135,000 on each side. So that puts 270,000 votes that were cast in there. Take 1% of that, that's 27,000, right? Mm-hmm. That's 27,000. Ben won by less than 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So
With marijuana, all those other things,
right?
Yeah.
And so now we're putting, what's the ballot initiative that somebody's putting on this next year?
Clean the Darn Air.
Oh, yeah, Clean the Darn Air. That's not going to help. They're not going to qualify. There's somebody else that put something out for legislative term limits. which we all know is a train wreck anyway, for all kinds of political reasons. So I'll just say this. At the end of the day, it's really sad that a third party with similar policy positions is going to sink them. It happens to Republicans, though.
Yeah.
We see
Dan, I'm going to let that be your gripe.
All right.
Tyrell, do you have a quick gripe? Really quick.
If I have a gripe, I guess the gripe is that we're having 20 Democratic candidates on the stage having debates when really there's only six of them who are credible.
Yeah, but you got to be grateful because all of them are running for mayor, so you get to come record with us.
That's great. I'll take it.
You guys have been great. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I'm with Dan McKay on the right and Tyrell Agard on the left. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.